have a drink since January 17th, 1981. I'm grateful for that, and I do believe that it's God's grace that allows me to come in here and keep me sober. And also, I was talking about this at the meeting I did over at Back on Track, gives me the desire not only not to drink, but the desire to grow in a more mature way in God's image and likeness. And I'm real far from that deal, but I have the desire to get better. And that's what I want to talk about tonight. I'm going to talk about, I got a certain idea in my mind what I want to bring up. And I'm going to start off with, by the way, it's good to see Danny here. Danny, I want you to stand for a second. I want to talk. Does everybody know Danny? Now, I need to tell you something about Danny. No, I like Danny. Danny's a good guy. Now, Danny's probably in the last two or three years, I don't know how many years since he's probably approached me about 6,000 times. And he says, and he approaches me, always says the same thing. He says, "Hey, how you doing?" He says, "You don't remember my name, do you?" And I don't. And he says, "It's Danny." And he always has the greatest attitude. He says, "It's Danny." I mean, personally, I can tell Danny's sober because, you see, because he doesn't get pissed off. He says, "I know you're Danny." Always says the same thing. And whenever he says Danny, as soon as he says Danny, I go, "That's right, I know that." You know what I mean? Because after the 5,000th time, you know, you're like, but for some reason, I don't know if there's some sort of mental block or something. You know, I see him, and if the name escapes me, he says, and I always give him that, then he has that, he can do that line. He says, "You don't remember, do you? Danny, you know?" So I don't think I can handle that anymore. I don't think I can handle it anymore. I have to take drastic action. And I know it's kind of selfish of me, but this is the only way I could think I could possibly remember your name. I have to single you out, you know, possibly embarrass you, but I understand you have no pride in regards to that. It's not going to mean anything to you. And then maybe there's a possibility that I might remember his name. Now, of course, if I don't, it's going to be even worse. It's just going to get even worse. It's like addiction. It's going to get even worse the next time. You know what I mean? He's going to say, like, "I can't believe it. You still don't remember my name." So. But that was all about the sixth step, I think. I don't know what it was. I want to take off on something. I got a little, you know what I try to do, really? I try to think of shit that you guys haven't heard before. Hell, I try to think of shit that I haven't heard before. I have no idea what I'm going to say. I hope it's good. Yeah, you know, I mean, I started thinking about stuff to say. I said, I want to think about something original. You know, I want to do stuff you can read in a book, or, you know, you can read this. You really ought to read this shit. You know, I mean, listen, this is the 12 steps. This is Dr. Bob and Good Old Timers. You need to get this. You need to read this. Very important. And this is the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't want to give you stuff that you're going to read right out of the book. I'll talk about the book, and we're going into the book and everything, but I want to give you some different ideas and some screwy ways of looking at things and different ways of looking at things. You know, I've been doing this for almost 29 years now, and I have, you know, one of the interesting aspects of AA, and I was thinking about this when it comes to the sixth step, which is sort of like a very interesting step. You know, it's the step that separates the men from the boys. It's the step. This is whatever the hell that means. Sounds pretty important to me. It says this is the step that separates the men from the boys, you know, and the interesting thing with this deal is we're in a room here, you know, where we got people with all levels of sobriety. We got people with like 1 week. We got people with like 52 years. We got people who are 18, 17 years old. We got people that are like 82 years old. We have people that are doing this stuff for a long time. We got people that have been through. We got people that are on the 12th step. We got people that have done the step 18,000 times. We got the people that don't even know what the steps are. I've never heard of them before. We got all this stuff going on in this room, and I'm gonna talk about this step. Now, listen. You know, no matter what I say, not everybody's gonna get anything. Gonna get out of this what everybody else is gonna get. You know, we're all gonna get unique stuff out of this. You know, most of the people that I'm talking to in here aren't even going to remember 99.9% of this stuff. And the one thing they're going to remember is probably a little bit different than I. It's like you're going to pick up something. It may not even be about the sixth step. Now, I mean to talk, just because I mean to talk about a certain thing, that doesn't mean it's going to be the thing you get. You know, I'll be talking about something, and a year from now, you'll come up to me and say, you know, that meeting you did on such and such really helped me, and you'll tell me how it helped you, and I won't even remember saying what I said, or meaning it that way. But because what I'm going to talk about, I think, and you know how I am, I'm all along, it's like an anchovy pizza, there's something for everybody, just take off the anchovy. I mean, it's like, I'm going to talk about a lot of shit. But what I mean to talk about is probably something that's going to be sort of heavy. When I say heavy, sort of like more apt to be picked up or meant to be focused on for guys that have been around for a while. I'm not going to talk about a lot of fun stuff. You know what I mean? Although I'll try to keep it light. But, I want to get into that, but I want to get into it like in a backhanded way. I want to, you know, and I've said this in this group before, and if I hadn't, well, you're going to hear it now anyway. It's all out of the literature, but AA started in 1935. And, you know, and a lot of you guys have heard this, but it bears repeating. It started in 1935. And the big book was written in 1939. Now, one of the things that I realize now, it says in the big book, it says, on page one, it says, we know that little good can come to any alcoholic who joins AA unless he first accepted his devastating weakness and all its consequences. Until he so humbles himself as sobriety, if any, will be precarious of real happiness. He knows he'll know none at all. And one of the things we talked about, I think, last week and all the other times is the understanding and somehow, and I think this happens with a little time. I don't think you get this right off the bat. I think the best I had right off the bat coming in here and I think it's a good thing, is when I looked the guy in the eye and said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. Is there anybody here besides me that actually came in here because they had a drinking problem? I'm it, huh? No, you know, people I think come today because they have a drinking problem. I can really see no other reason to come to Alcoholics Anonymous, really, when you think about it, why would anybody come to Alcoholics Anonymous unless they got to the point where they couldn't stop drinking? I guess you could be court ordered or something like that. But I came here because I had a drinking problem. I didn't come here because I knew I was crazy, but I didn't come in here because I was crazy. I knew I was depressed. I knew I it would have been nice if I had a girlfriend. I knew I needed money, but I didn't come here for money. I came here because I couldn't stop drinking. I had a drinking problem. But, you know, I think over a period of time, I think one of the things that happens to people if they go to meetings and they come here is they start getting a wider picture or a more defined picture of what the problem is. And they may not really totally understand the problem, but I'd like to think that most people that have been around here for a while start realizing or getting the suspicion that the problem is more than just alcohol. As a matter of fact, I think that most people that have like a couple of neurons working kind of understand that if they stop drinking and they're still crazy, that this is a serious disease. That there's some, you know, I don't care how they say it. They may say, I have the committee going in my head, or, you know, whatever they say, somewhere along the road, they realize that even if they're physically sober, they got some real serious problems going on. And one of the things that I realize is that the problems that I have are much, much deeper than even what I imagine. I mean, one of the problems that, you know, one of the things I had to accept, which is really hard to accept when you think you're know-it-all and you know everything, is that I don't know what I don't know. That just because I think it's true doesn't mean it's true. That my best thinking got me in here. I mean, I just had a real healthy disrespect for my own thinking. That's a really, really healthy deal. When you start having a healthy disrespect for your own thinking and you start doubting yourself, it's okay, even though you feel strong. As a matter of fact, the stronger you feel about something, the more you're a little bit concerned. You know, and that kind of stuff happened to me. And because everything, what I ultimately realized is all the good shit, all the good stuff about Alcoholics Anonymous, all the stuff that's really going to help me, I'm against. I'm against it. You know, I mean, that's the truth. The truth is, everything that's good and righteous and right in AA, I am against it. You know, they say that some of these things we balk, they lie. We balk at all of them. You know what I mean? We just balk at some less than others. You know, that my natural way of doing things, you want to know what my natural way of doing things like? The way I'm comfortable in doing things? you'd have to look at me when I was drunk. You just look at the way I acted when I was drunk, then you'll know how I like. If you want to look how I want to live my life and what I think is right and what I think is important and what I think is the real deal, then you better look at me outside of these rooms, outside of sponsorship, outside of these books. Look at me before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Then you'll know who I really am. Because if you want to know who you are, don't look at yourself while you're in here. Look at yourself when you were unrestrained, undisciplined, doing things exactly the way you wanted to do it, using your brain because you think it was right, and look at what was going on inside there, because that's who you are. That's who you are. Don't kid yourself. You're not this. You're that. I'm this because of the grace of God, which I don't understand, because of some sort of desire, which I don't understand, because of other people, because of this book, because of a whole lot of things right now that are almost constraining me. Sometimes in a forceful way, sometimes in persuasive ways that I don't even understand. Sometimes, you know, alcoholics tend to bow to peer pressure. You are who you hang out with. I mean, don't get, hey, listen, you know, the old story, when I was in Key West, I drank margaritas. When I was in country and western bars, I drank beer. When I was in New York, I drank Manhattans. I never got them mixed up. I never went to a country and western bar and said, hey, you got a margarita? You know what I mean? I thought I was free will. I was not free will. I was whatever you wanted me to be to fit in. So, you know, if I come in here and I start hanging around with you guys, I'm going to start looking and acting sober just by virtue of the fact that I'm sitting in the room and I want people to like me. And if I start hanging around with a guy who's got 30, 40 years sober, I'm going to start talking like a guy who's got 30 and thinking like a guy who's got 30 or 40 years sober. And if I start hanging around with people that have less time with me, just so I could be the big shot or something like that, and I don't want to be listening to some other guys, I'm going to start talking like them. You know, I'm going to start going through osmosis, you know, and you got to understand, while all this is going on, I got this disease of alcoholism, which is never cured. I am, for whatever reason, I mean, God has this plan. I am built with this disease. There's a great line with the Apostle Paul where he says, I had this thorn. It was satanic. I asked God to take it away. He says, I will not do it. He says, because you're a conceited son of a gun. Well, God didn't say that. Well, he did say, because you're conceited, I won't take it away from you. He says, because when you're weak, I'm strong. He says, when you're weak, I'm strong. He says, when you're strong, you just do whatever the heck you want to do. He says, I'm not taking this thing away from you. It's going to be hanging over your head. This is God's leash on me, this alcoholism. It never goes. Nobody ever gets cured. It's like gravity. Gravity never goes away. It's always there. This disease is always waiting there 24. It says, that's why I can't coast. I can't coast. I try to coast. I can work hard. See, I can get to the point. You had a saying I said last time, he says, an alcoholic is unemployable. When he comes in 3 months later, he's underpaid. We can get to the point where we feel good about ourselves, we're feeling okay, we feel like we're doing okay, and about precisely that point, we think we've got it made, and that's about the point when we start going backwards. That's right at the point where we start going backwards and sliding back. And sometimes you don't realize you're going backwards until 20 years down the road, because there's consequences to not doing this thing and not working this thing. And this is a constant, I want to use the word battle, but it's a constant moving forward. And that desire has to keep on going. This disease is a strong disease. In 1935, this thing started. In 1939, they published the book. In the book, it says, rarely have we... And the book was published in 1939. 4 years after things started. They were meeting for 4 years after it started. Now, you know my old theory about alcoholism. Most of you know. If you don't know, I'll say it again. I've noticed something about myself. I've noticed something about alcoholism in this book. In the book, when they define what alcoholism is, they say it's not the booze. It's not the drinking. What it really is it's my thinking. It says, alcohol is not the problem. Alcohol consumption is a symptom of our disease. You know, we drink. You ready for this? This is like wild. Because we are alcoholic. That's why alcoholics drink, because they have alcoholism. You know, when I used to say things like, well, I'm drinking this for medicinal purposes, I was right. That was true. You know what I mean? Alcohol is the medicine we use for alcoholism. My alcoholism centers in my mind, not my body, which is probably why you're still here even though you're sober. Because somehow, some way, you figure out, you get it, that when you stop going to these rooms, you may not drink right away, but you're nuts. I mean, somehow, some way, you've experienced craziness outside these rooms sober. And you come into these rooms and you say a few things and you do a few things and all of a sudden you're less crazy. And you've somehow made that connection. You're not quite sure how, that you're not being nuts. And you sort of connected being nuts has something to do with this disease. You're not being nuts has something to do with your alcoholism, which has something to do with doing this stuff, which none of which has anything to do with booze. But you know, like, booze is waiting out there somewhere. But you know it's not really the disease. You know you're not really fighting the alcohol now, because you don't have a desire to drink. You just have a desire not to be crazy. And so you come over here. And so we come in this deal, and one of the things I talk about, I'm not going to go through the whole story, but you know, my former wife, beautiful gal, first wife, son, house on Miami Beach on the golf course, 26 years old. I come out one day. She says, "You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you." That's what she says. She says, "You come home drunk one more time." She could have said a lot of things, but that's not what she said. She said that. She says, "You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you." And, you know, I mean, I've got all sorts of degrees on the wall. Very simple statement. You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I get in my car. I drive 10 blocks down the road. I stop at a stoplight. First thing I say to myself is, "Well, what the hell could she mean by that?" Now, listen, we laugh at that. Listen, when you miss, and I meant it, I didn't understand it, confused me. Now, when you miss something like that, when somebody says, "You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you," and that confuses you, you're not quite sure what that means, why she would say that and what that means. Let me give you a suggestion. There's a possibility that if that confuses you, you may be missing. And you know, if something confuses me, I either put it off to the side or throw it away or don't think about it or get mad about it or something, but it does nothing to change me in my life. Now listen to me, there's a possibility, if that kind of thing confused me, that there may have been other messages given to me just as clear that I missed. You understand what I'm saying? There may be actually messages coming to you right now all over the place. You're going to go bankrupt if you keep on spending money like this, you know? If you spend money on credit cards that you don't have and you don't pay, but you're going to go into debt. You know, there may be a million messages going on in your life right now that are clear to everybody else in the world except for you. And all of a sudden, somewhere down the road when you go bankrupt or you blow up or you explode and somebody points you out and says, "Well, didn't you realize this was going to happen?" You go, "Well, I guess," you know what I mean? And you somehow don't even understand how you didn't, even though you're intelligent in many ways. So one of the axioms that I have is being an alcoholic, part of the nature of our alcoholism. It says unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and its devastating weakness and all its consequences, there's something wrong with my brain. There's a lot of stuff wrong with my brain. And I don't necessarily see clear things. And that when an alcoholic sees, hears, or is told something he does not like, or makes him uncomfortable, it confuses him. And when an alcoholic gets confused, he either gets mad or he somehow X's it out so it goes away so he doesn't have to deal with it. So sponsors get fired and people get their backs turned on. And you get mad because if you can get mad at me, or if you can X this, then you don't have to listen to me and you don't have to change. And you can continue on with your sort of bullshit story. Your wishful thinking, your fictitious deal that you think, you know, that you can do all sorts of things in your life and get away with it. And you can continue on doing that. And if you stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, you can do it for 15 years. And even if you do it for 15 years and you act crazy, as long as you don't drink, they'll give you a medallion. And you can think you're like you're sober, you know, because they're giving you like a birthday cake. I mean, you're not sponsoring anybody because nobody wants what you have, but, you know, you can just get mad at that too. Or get mad at other people that sponsor people. They're not asking you to do the steps or anything like that because nobody wants to hear what you have to say, but you can get mad at that too. There's a lot of things you can get mad at and make it go away. So we say, one of the things we say in the big book, at every meeting you go to, at every single meeting you go to, you hear the following. Here's what you hear. You ready? This is like what my ex-wife said to me. If you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And then it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Anybody ever heard that before? Rarely have we seen a person fail. Now, this is what I think it means. We're going to sign it. Now we say it so much and we read it so much that I don't think people really think about what it means. Think about it. This is like my ex-wife saying, if you come home drunk one time, I'm going to leave you. And I go, what the hell do you mean? She mean by that? Rarely have we seen a person fail as thoroughly followed our path. I think what they mean is this. If you follow our path, you'll get what we got. You know, now I think what people actually hear is you can do what you want to do and you'll still get what we got. Or something like that. You know what I mean? Because here's what happens. Here's what happens. In 1935, they started this thing and they worked it till 1939. Then they wrote a book, said, Rarely I've Seen First Fails Thoroughly Follow Our Path. When they wrote the book, the one thing that was clear that they didn't do is it was clear that they never read the big book. Because the big book hadn't been read. So if you think that their path was reading the big book, you would be wrong. What their path was is they read the Bible. Now I'm not telling you this so you run out and get a Bible or a holy or anything like that or you get baptized. Or I'm just telling you that's a fact. Listen to me. Just because it makes you uncomfortable, just because you don't like it, doesn't make it less of a fact. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, there's a lot of things in this world you don't like. You don't like the fact when you first come in that you can't drink. You don't like the fact that you can't hang out with your friends at the bar. There's a ton of things you don't like. Doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. They read the Bible. The first meeting was done by Dr. Bob, where he read Matthew 5, 6, and 7. The whole meeting was on Sermon on the Mount. And that's a fact. And so if you happen to be a student of the Bible, which I was not when I came in here, if you're not a student of the Bible, you'll read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you'll think like this is like some sort of original deal. You understand what I'm saying? That has nothing to do with anything. It was like Bill Wilson, like from the sky, sort of this came out of nowhere except his mind. And the only person, like you know that, but of course Bill Wilson would have never said that. Nor did he ever say that. Which is why he said to Henrietta Seidman, when Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I can keep on talking about it and then telling other people what the Lord has done. Because the bottom line, and the reason he used the word Lord, it's right there in our book, is because he was reading the Bible. But if you become a student of the Bible, and I'm not saying you should, but if you do, okay, what you'll do is you'll read the big book, it'll mean something different to you. Because you'll see infused within the big book is all of Scripture. That's been written over a period of 8,000 years by some of the most spiritual people that you can possibly imagine. You'll see where it says, no, it's quite the opposite. You'll see where it says things like we lose prejudice, even against organized religion. We begin to see how religious people are right. We see that all through the big book. It's not what we think it is. But the problem that what it really is a celebration of God and your relationship with God and getting more involved in religion and getting back on the right track. But we're all alcoholics in here. And alcoholism is a very serious disease. So even though that's what Bill Wilson wrote, and even though that's what he meant, and that's what every word on his body said, his enthusiasm, the truth of the matter is that a year after he was sober, he was saying things like this. If I can find it. At least it's suspenseful. I can't wait to see whether it's in here. In the early days, this is about a year and a half, so, you know, she recalls, Bill said to me, this is Bill talking to Henrietta Seidman. Now, this is the same Bill who saw the white light. This is the same Bill who said, so this is the God of the Father. This is the same Bill who said, the Lord has been so grateful to me, curing me this terrible disease that I can keep talking about and telling other people. He said that to Bill Dodson, changed Bill Dodson's life. He saw that Bill placed great emphasis on God and relationship with God. But a few months after that, this is what he said to Henrietta Seidman. In the early days, she recalled, Bill said to me, now get this is the same guy. Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. In other words, he was a few months after saying that, after being close to this deal, he was feeling better, he was looking better, and he was looking at the crowd, and he was more worried about getting in more people, more worried about what other people thought about him. You know why? Because he was an alcoholic, like you. More concerned about whether he was going to look goofy or whether people were going to laugh at him. Less concerned with what actually happened to him. As a matter of fact, Bill Dotson said this was the golden rule, because you could see Bill was entirely grateful for being saved and made sober, and he had basically given God all the credit for it. That's right out of our literature. But a few months afterwards, Bill Wilson is saying to Henrietta already, I don't think we should talk so much about God or religion. Religion or God. Why would he say that? He said, I don't think we should do it. To new people. I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. I said to him, this is what she said to him. Well, we're not out to please alcoholics. They have been pleasing themselves all these years. We are out to please God. And if you don't talk about what God does and your faith and your guidance, then you might as well be the Rotary Club or something like that, because God is your only source of power. Finally, Bill Wilson agreed. And because he agreed, he was about ready to turn and go the opposite direction. And if he had gone the opposite direction, we wouldn't have had any of this stuff in here. And more than likely, we'd all be drinking. But understand, Bill Wilson, who wrote this thing and everybody holds up and everything like that, a year after he was sober, this disease was already pulling him back. He was looking at the worldly clamors. He was looking at the people in the room. He was looking at the guys that were turning him off and saying, I don't want to listen to that bullshit, you know. And he was already trying to say, well, let's throw God under the bus because people don't like it. He was already doing that deal until he was turned around by Henrietta Seiberling. Now we have a book. It says, see to it, your relationship with him is writing. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Seek God. God couldn't would if he was thought. And now God's all infused in our book. The whole thing's in our book. It's all about God. But understand that a year and a half into this thing, Bill Wilson, despite the most sincere speaking and what happened to him and how he's lifted up, was ready to go another direction. Now you think, well, thank God for that, right? Because now we got this book. Now we got this book, right? Thank God we have this book and all these other books. But I want you to understand something. This is based upon 29 years of going here. That line from Bill Wilson, that line was not unique to Bill Wilson. I don't think we should talk so much about God and religion. That feeling that Bill Wilson had, was anti-AA, the opposite of AA, the worst part. He wanted to be more comfortable. He wanted to be more liked. He wanted people to like him. He didn't want anybody in the back room saying, this guy's full of shit. He wanted everybody to love him. He didn't want anybody to dislike him or think he was a whole, you know. So you got to understand, that idea that he had, let's not rattle any feathers. Let's not get anybody pissed off. Let's not talk about God. Let's make it easy. Let's not make anybody uncomfortable. Let's make everybody happy to be here and everything, no matter what. Let's lower the bar. Everybody come. It doesn't matter. That idea was not something that arose out of Bill Wilson's alcoholism and his tendency to backpedal and to rest on his laurels and forget where he came from. That tendency was not unique to Bill Wilson. It's part of alcoholism. It's part of every one of us. And that whole idea that you think is ditched, let me tell you something. It's alive and well in Alcoholics Anonymous today. It's alive and well. And anybody who's been to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous knows that the primary tenet in most rooms is don't talk about God or religion. And that doesn't come from Alcoholics Anonymous. That comes from another deal. That comes from a whole other place. Now, what does that have to do with the sixth step? The reason it has to do with the sixth step is sort of like an interesting and yet troubling deal. This is the step that separates the men from the boys, it says. So what are they actually talking about in the sixth step? You know, let me give you a suggestion, okay? And I'm talking to myself too. If this stuff ain't bothering you, you're probably not doing it. You know, you're probably not doing it. I mean, if you're real comfortable and none of this stuff is bothering you, you're probably missing something. And I say that to myself too. Sometimes I get so happy about this stuff and I feel so good. And I feel I know in the back of my mind, that's because I'm not really doing it. Well, I don't know. We'll see when I get to the end of this. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. So declares a well-loved clergyman. Where did that come from? They're all over the clergyman. A well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person, now you remember, this is the book. Remember what it says in this book? After you take the third step? Now you guys have all taken the third step. We went through the third step. We're past the third step. We're not arguing about the third step. That's the step where it says, they talk about the selfishness, the self-centeredness. It says, above all, we must get rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. Well, you know, in that step, that's the step where we say, in the fifth chapter, many of us said to our makers, we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. And by him, I don't think they're talking about like Jeffrey Schwartz down the street. You know what I mean? Or my boyfriend or my girlfriend. Because it's capitalized him. Abandon yourself utterly to God. So now we go on to the sixth step, which is sort of like the consequences of living a life where you're abandoning yourself to God. You know, you ever hear the old saying, you're all talk and no action? You know, talk is cheap. And I can tell you one thing, in AA, when all said and done, there'll be a lot more said than done. A lot of talk, hey listen, you know, the easiest thing in the world for an alcoholic to do, and who knows better than me, is to talk a good talk. It's to sit around and talk for hours. Then I'll tell you, it's all in the action, isn't it? It's all in what you're actually doing and who you're hanging around with and what you're focused on. That's the deal, isn't it? That's how you tell. Do you know, I have a little saying that I use. The guys who draw for me, I talk about bathing the parakeet. Bathing the parakeet. You know, I never talk about excuses, you know. They say, where's Freddie? He says, oh, he had to bathe the parakeet tonight. He couldn't make, he says, he wanted to be with, but he had to bathe the parakeet. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, you know, sometimes those parakeets need to be washed, you know. You know, I wanted to be there with you, Russ, but, you know, tonight's my night to bathe the parakeet, you know. If you, you don't want to have a dirty parakeet. You know, Jesus got that a lot, you know. I don't know how much you know about that. The guy says, I really want to follow you, you know, but I got to bathe the parakeet, you know. He's the rich young ruler, right, you know. He says, I'll do anything to be with you. He says, sell all you have and give it to the poor. He says, oh, I will, but I got to bathe the parakeet. There's a lot of people bathing parakeets around here. A lot of people really wanting to do this stuff, but, you know, sometimes, you know, you just got to bathe that parakeet. I mean, nobody's going out drinking. No, mind you, nobody's going to booze parties. It's just bathing parakeets, that's all. Because it's important. Somebody's got to do that, you know? And this is the step that separates the men from the boys, so declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of A's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all his faults without any reservations whatever has indeed come a long way spiritually, and is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own creator. Well, I guess your higher power could be a doorknob. Could be a doorknob. Of course, to be a doorknob, you then have to believe that you were created by a doorknob. Look. I'm sorry. Look, listen to me. We got to get real here. Just because you don't like God, you don't like the idea of a deity, don't make this book into something it's not. Don't make believe this book says something that makes you feel uncomfortable, because it's uncomfortable for you to believe that they're talking about God, the deity God, and you don't want to go that way. Just say you're unwilling to do what they talk about in this book. If you want to say, I won't do AA as written, I'm going to do it my way. My way. My way. I'm not even going to consider doing it there. I'm going to do it my way, and therefore, since I'm allowed to do it my way, because the way I read this book, it says, here's what they read. They read God as you understand them as, I can do anything I want. I can bend the language any way I want, and you know something? They can. You can. AA won't kick you out. You can. But here's the point. The point is, if in fact this thing is consistent and it goes with the English language and you're going to be honest, rigorously honest, to understand what they're really talking about here and you still don't do it, here's the point. You will suffer consequences. there will be consequences to those actions. There are reasons why people drink after 20 years or after 10 years, after 5. There are reasons why a lot of people don't. There's reasons why people are 15 years sober and miserable. There's reason, you know, you might be able to stay sober for a long period of time, then somewhere at the end it's going to blow up. There are reasons. You can't just do whatever the heck you want to do and get exactly what they got. When these people say we've experienced much of heaven and we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, if you aren't there or haven't experienced it, that isn't happening. Well, it could be because you're on your way, because there's a certain amount of desert time, and it could be because you're not really doing this thing. There's something you're holding back on. There's a surrender you're not doing because you just refuse to do it. You're just not going to do it because you're an alcoholic and that chief characteristic is your defiant. Now, one of the things they talk about in here, and it's all, if you know anything about the Bible and biblical stuff and you understand about it, you know it's all in here. One of the things they talk about this thing, and if you like it or not, is sin. Sin. You think that's churchy, huh? Well, it is churchy because the whole thing comes out of church in the Bible. They talk about it in here. The only reason you don't know that they talk about it is here is because you don't read the material. No, that's the truth. You just don't read the material. You memorize a couple things like acceptance is the answer to all my... You memorize like the safe stuff. The stuff that sounds good and acceptance is the answer to all my problems. You never have to change. Just have to accept, you know. Well, you know, I guess if God wants me to have a job, he'll shoot one down to the room here, you know, while I'm here, and, you know. Well, I mean, you just sort of accept stuff, you know, and then, you know, you just, you know, first things first, easy does it. All the safe stuff that doesn't require you to change or do anything, you know. You just don't want to read this crap. Some of the toughest crap in the whole book, and that's why it's separate. The stuff that says you must be perfect, like him, grow in his image, knowing that you can never be perfect. It's probably one of the greatest struggles for me because you know why? Because I'm an alcoholic, which means I prefer to be a screw-up. I like being a screw-up. I like the idea of belonging to an organization where we celebrate screw-up. Where you can screw up all you want and nobody will kick you out because it's okay because I'm an alcoholic. You know? Where going to heaven and Valhalla has nothing to do with my actions. You can't judge it. Don't take my inventory. Hey, it's carnal. Don't take my inventory. You're not supposed to take my inventory. Who are you to take my inventory? You know, listen, you take your own inventory. You know what I mean? I can do whatever I want to do in AA. I just sort of like an organization where I can be the most screwed up idiot guy and do all sorts of things and never suffer any consequences. You want something? You can't call me on it. Because in AA, you know, love and tolerance is our code. You know what I mean? And you know, and just sort of bend the rules so I can be a giant baby and never grow up and never do anything and just wallow in my sins because hey, it ain't about religion. You know what I mean? You tell us, I just want to, you know, I like this organization because it's like perfect for drunks. Because I can continue to be a drunk in this organization. All I have to do is not drink and they'll give me a medallion anyway. They might even elect me king of the room or something like that. Because they're scared of me or something. I don't know. Unfortunately, we have this literature that nobody reads. Since most of us are born with an abundance of natural desires, it isn't strange that we often let these far exceed their intended purpose. When they drive us blindly or we willfully demand that they supply us with more satisfactions or pleasures than are possible to do us, that is the point at which we depart from the degree of perfection that God wishes for us here on earth. That is the measure of our character defects, or if you wish, of our sins. Why read that stuff? But of course, in order to read of our sins, then you'd have to understand why they use the word sin and what sin all about. And then you'd have to go back to the book they were looking at, because that's the reason they use the word, because the whole thing is based upon the Holy Bible. You'd have to look about, you'd have to understand a little bit about sin. You'd have to understand what sin is. You'd have to understand God's relationship to sin and why God wants man to try to be sinless and to be something called righteous. And you'd have to understand that deal. But why would you want to understand that deal? That would require you actually do something that you don't want to do, like read the Bible and grow in a different direction and maybe change and be like those self-righteous jerk offs that you can't stand, and you prefer to be sort of like an alcoholic drunk in here and just doing your thing and not grow up and just get mad and pissed off at people that talk like I do, because who is he? He's so self-righteous. That's what you prefer to do, because if I'm right then you're not doing shit, you're just pretending. to be sober. And there's more work you can be doing, but you're not doing it only because it makes you uncomfortable, because you don't have enough time, because after all, you got to watch the parakeet. And there's girls out there for the guys, and guys out there, you know, guys out there for the girls, and other stuff going on, and all that sort of deal. Well, by anybody who's got less than 10 years, I'm not even talking to you. This ain't even about you. Don't worry. I'm full of shit. This is... One guy with 1 month just went out the door. He's going to commit suicide. Some people, of course, may conclude that they are indeed ready to have all such defects taken from them. But even these people, if they construct a list of still milder defects, will be obliged to admit that they prefer to hang on to some of them. Therefore, it seems plain that few of us can quickly or easily become ready to aim at spiritual and moral perfection. We want to settle for only as much perfection as will get us by in life, according, of course, to our various and sundry ideas of what will get us by. So the difference between the men and the boys is the difference between striving for a self-determined objective and for a perfect objective, which is of God. You know, it's the difference between saying, well, this is good enough. This is as good as I can do. Well, you know, I'm a screw-up and I'm an alcoholic. I can't expect... And to look at really the way our Creator, our God, the God of our understanding, wants us. And you can look all through the big book and you get an idea of how God wants you to live. How He wants you to act towards other people. How He wants you to think. You can find spot. You can choose to associate yourself with people that are going to take your inventory, or are going to rebuke you, are going to say things to you that you don't like, are going to make you uncomfortable, or you can choose to sort of hang out with your best friend. And my sponsor's like my best friend. You know what I mean? Oh man, we're like buds. You know what I mean? He never gives me any crap. He's always kind and loving to me. You can hang out with people that, you know, they're just your friends, and never grow. And never change, and never have anybody lay on anything that makes you uncomfortable or anything like that. You can choose anything you want to do in AA. We're big boys and girls in here. But there is a difference between the men and the boys. There's a difference between where the men wind up and where the boys wind up. You know, the difference has to do with relationships and where they wind up. And it may take 10 years for the whole thing, you know, to come out. I gotta tell you something. It's sort of like a struggle for me. It really is a difficult thing for alcoholics. I'll tell you where I find it difficult. You know, as y'all know, like I am a Christian and I do a lot of Bible study and stuff. I have a lot of difficulty with this. I have a lot of difficulties with the parts of the Bible. And and you want to know something? I got to tell you something. I want to bend them to mean what I think they mean to me. And believe me, the tendency is I think the parts of the Bible mean to me that I don't like are the ones that talk about being righteous and being perfect and being like Him. And those are the things that I don't like the most. And what I want to do is I just really want to give myself a huge pass on that deal. And you know why I want to give myself a pass? Let me tell you why. Because I am such a screw up. I'm such a screw up. You know what I mean? And we're all going to work out. We're going to all, now I've been working on this deal. How can I be a person trying to grow in the image of the, and likeness and do what He wants me to do so I can have a better relationship with Him, yet still understand that I'm a screw up and I'm a screw up all the time. And I'm probably never going to be perfect and not feel horrible or condemning about myself and beating myself up all the time, because I also want to be, I don't want to be guilty and I don't want to be there. And I can only tell you this. I figured out something to a certain degree, which I will not share with you tonight. You're going to have to figure out your own deal on that. There is guidance on this somewhere, okay? This doesn't mean walking around feeling like a piece of crap. You know it doesn't mean feeling like a piece of crap and feeling crappy and screwing up, because you know even in the Bible they all screwed up. You know David screwed up. We read it last week. You know it has something to do with confession. Because we talked about, you know, it has something to do with admitting your sins to yourself and other people and to God. You know, it has something to do with repenting. It has something to do with wanting to make things right and making amends to other people. It's all written within that deal. But it doesn't say, be a screw up. Or it's okay to be a screw up. Or we like it when you're a screw up. What it says is you don't have to let that stop you from moving forward. Okay? And that the men in this deal understand that there are things they can do so they can set their relationship right and move forward, even as the world, because let me tell you something, this world, I told some gal, I said, the problem with staying sober in this world is the world just refuses to stop moving. No matter what you're doing, no matter how hard you're staying sober, it just won't stop for you. I mean, you can't, if the doctor says to you, I'm sorry, we think you have cancer, you can't say, but I only have 18 months sobriety, I can't handle this shit now. You know, it moves anyway. You know what I mean? If all of a sudden you lose your job, you can't say, I can't lose my job, I only have 24 months. I'm not ready for this. You know, I mean, crap happens. The world is going to move on. Stuff is going to happen. Things, it's like this. This is like a moving target. This is like, you're going to, this thing is moving and moving and moving. You're going to wake up tomorrow morning, you know, thinking a certain thing, and somebody's going to move the furniture. The furniture is going to be moved. And you're going to say, what? I got a call from a guy today. He had $25,000 in the bank last night when he went to sleep. He woke up this morning, he had zero. Somebody went bankrupt, they freezed everything, and all of a sudden it's gone. How would you like to have $25,000 in the bank, and you go to sleep with $25,000? There is nothing secure. We are powerless. You never know what's going to happen. You go to sleep thinking one thing, next thing you know, you got cancer. You go to things thinking you're going to go this, next thing you know, you go that. This world is moving. It doesn't really care what step you're on. It really doesn't care whether you have a sponsor or you don't have a sponsor. Whether you picked up a chip, whether you're drunk or so, it's moving. It's an escalator. It's moving along at light speed. And you're going to have, let me tell you something, you're going to have to do this thing while you're running. Do you know what I mean? While you're trudging that road, it's not going to stop for you. And you know something, you're not going to do it perfectly. You're going to drop the ball a couple times. You're going to have to figure out this thing on the move. You know what I mean? As you're going. You're going to have to try to put this thing together. Now here's the good news. It's going to get easier. Now here's the bad news. It's going to get painful. Because there's going to be pain. And that's what it says in the 12 and 12. It says nobody's going to do this stuff. That's why all the insistence on hitting bottom and nobody's going to do this stuff without pain. Because you'd rather sit back, go to meetings and like wash the parakeet. You don't want to do any of this stuff. Nobody wants to do any of it. Nobody wants to, you know, you listen to this stuff and say, yeah, this is good, this is great. Now you're going to go outside and you're going to go home and you're going to forget about everything. And so one day, 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, when the crunch comes and you get beat up and blah, 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 and something happens, you're going to start thinking to yourself, maybe I should do wrong, blah, blah, blah. You might think about this meeting, you might not. It might be something that comes to mind. You might not even know why you're doing it. And you're going to think about stuff. All of a sudden, you'll find yourself in a Bible study somewhere. You'll find yourself reading some book that you never thought you'd read, or talking to somebody, or following somebody you never thought you'd follow. And it'll change this thing. Next thing you know, you'll be at a meeting, you'll be talking like I'm talking. Some guy will say, man, what the hell happened? You won't even know where you got it from. You won't even remember this meeting. You know what I mean? You'll just have gone through life sober. You'll be hurting, and you'll have the desire not to be that way. And you'll be moving in a different direction. And you know, and somehow it'll happen to you. And everybody eventually who stays sober and experiences, you know, the joy of living and everything comes around to this deal. Comes around to actually reading this book and understanding this book and accepting this book and getting more and more in the image and like and understanding this book the way it was written and how it was written. I understand, you know, when you're young, hip, slick, and cool, you know what I mean? You want to try to get away with as much stuff as you can get away with and do this sort of thing as much as you can do it and feel okay about yourself without really changing that much and not really looking that different from what the world looks like, you know? The commercials and everything like that, and all you want is just sort of, like, nobody here wants to be ridiculed or look different or stand out like some sort of weirdo or something like that. But, you know, somewhere down the road when you get to be around 60 years old, like I'm 60 years old, and, you know, you're no longer chasing that deal, like the deal is you're chasing, whatever thing is you're chasing, you know what I mean? And the parakeet becomes less important, and it becomes more important where you're going to be for eternity and who you are and what you think about yourself and how you feel about yourself. You may find yourself focused and thinking about different things. When the booze isn't a problem and the drugs isn't a problem anymore and you're no longer looking to get laid every night, and, you know, you're no longer judging about who you are, what you are, whether you have a guy or a gal or a car or any of that stuff. And none of that stuff means anything to you and you're just trying to live happily with your God and be a decent person and feel good about yourself. You may find yourself focused on other things. Hanging out with different people. You know, you may find yourself in that deal. And, you know, then, you know, no matter what you think of this talk right now, whatever it is, you might look back on it and you think about it a little bit differently. So thank you very much. That's super punk.